Now, with those brief technical reminders, oops, let me go back here. I'd like to provide a disclaimer that this is an informational webinar only, and it is not intended to serve as a consultation. The topics and themes that will be discussed today will be included in a summary of the tribal consultation and coordination efforts, but this is a reminder that any comments and/or questions received during this webinar will not be submitted to the docket or be considered as a public comment. EPA will accept public comments on the designation of PFOA and PFAS as CERCLA hazardous substances for 60 days after publication of the Federal Register notice announcing the proposed rulemaking. EPA encourages tribes to submit comments to the docket as part of the public comment period. The specific dates for the submittal of the public comments are posted on EPA's website and will be discussed in our webinar. And I'll be sharing a link as shown here in the meeting chat with all of you in just a moment. So with those quick disclaimers, I think we can get ready to start with our presentation materials. And I'd like to turn it over to our first speaker today. Now, as I swap out the presentation content, I'll just confirm that those new slides are up on the screen. Dana, I can see that you are on video, so you are welcome to unmute. And I'd like to provide just a brief introduction to you before turning the floor over. Again, we're being joined by Dana Stalfkup, who is in the Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation here at EPA as the Deputy Office Director, a position that he assumed in the spring of 2017. Dana also represents the Office of Land and Emergency Management on EPA's Council on PFAS. Dana, I'll turn the floor to you to begin the presentation.
Thank you very much, Jean, and thank you to all of you participating in today's webinar about this Notice of Proposed Rulemaking designating perfluorooctanoic acid, or PFOA, PFOA or PFOA, and perfluorooctane sulfonic, or PFOS or PFOS acid, as CERCLA hazardous substances. That's probably the last time during the webinar that I will say the full names of these two chemicals, but I will refer to both PFOA and PFOS throughout the webinar. So with that, can we go to the next slide, Jean? Okay, so the purpose of this webinar is to provide information on this notice of proposed rulemaking to designate PFOA and PFOS as CERCLA hazardous substances. And as I go through the next few slides, you will see what we mean by that and what the implications are. So moving to our next slide. CERCLA, or the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act of 1980, commonly referred to as CERCLA or Superfund. In CERCLA Section 102, the EPA administrator has the authority to revise the list of substances specified as hazardous. And in this case, we are using that authority to propose adding two substances to the list of hazardous substances. We also have the authority in that same section to assign a reportable quantity for the which regulates when releases have to be reported to the federal government. And I'll get more into that in a few minutes. I did want to point out that there are currently about 800 CERCLA hazardous substances. In addition, there are approximately 1,500 radionuclides, and approximately half or so of them are listed individually as hazardous substances. These hazardous substances that are already on the list are there by reference from other statutes, including the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, TSCA, and RCRA. This is the first time that the agency is proposing to use our CERCLA 102 authority. And so this is in addition to, you know, for these two substances, a momentous, important action. This is also the first time that we're using this authority. And we think that that we wanted to make sure that you guys understood that. Next slide, please. So potential tribal interests. I have talked to some of you before on the webinar and looking at the list of registrants, and we have done a lot of outreach to a lot of different groups regarding this effort. But in my prior conversations with you, I've met with members of the Tribal PFAS Working Group, that you have identified the designation of per and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or better known as PFAS, which include these specific substances today, PFOA and PFAS, as hazardous substances. And the PFAS, the Tribal PFAS Working Group, identified that as one of the current tribal PFAS science needs, issues, and priorities. Tribes and tribal groups have already expressed concerns in the past with EPA about the proximity of contamination of PFOA and PFAS to tribal lands. And the reporting requirement of this rule will provide tribes with increased information on releases that impact their lands, people, or resources. We do appreciate the dialogue we've had with the Tribal PFAS Working Group. And we have on this slide the link to the Tribal PFAS Working Group information about that working group. So thank you guys. For those of you who have been involved with that group, thank you very much for your support, for your information, and for your recommendations, including this action we're taking today. Next slide, please. So another, in addition to the guidance and the advice that we've gotten from the tribal group, EPA did establish last year our strategic roadmap on how to address PFAS. It was announced and released by the administrator in October of 2021, and it outlined a whole of EPA across all of the programs in EPA, a strategy to protect public health and the environment from exposures and other concerns caused by PFAS. The roadmap also works with other federal efforts across the Biden-Harris administration to try to improve our air, our food, our drinking water, and protect the citizens from any exposures that might be of concern. EPA's PFAS roadmap outlines a number of specific actions across all of our programs within the agency. And it's built on three themes: research, restrict, and remediate. And this action that we're taking here is one of the key activities under remediate. This provides us additional authority and an additional knowledge of contamination that's already in the environment. There are a number of other activities going on in the research area with led by our Office of Research and Development, but also other offices within EPA, both in terms of understanding better what the impacts and the effects of the various PFAS are, also in technologies regarding how to learn more about how to detect, how to test for levels, how to destroy and remediate these PFAS. So a lot of research going on. Restriction, we have in several programs work in terms of trying to restrict the entry of new PFAS into the society without the proper protections and other ways of preventing releases from occurring. And then, as I said, remediate, which this action that we're talking about today is a linchpin of our work on remediating PFAS. And then just kind of the last point here, one of the specific commitments in the PFAS roadmap was to issue this proposed rule that we're talking about today to designate PFOA and PFAS as CERCLA hazardous substances. So we are fulfilling one of the commitments that the administrator and the agency made in the roadmap last year to propose this rule. Next slide, please. So as background, a little bit more about what this all means. EPA is, with the action that we actually released last week on our website and was published earlier this week, yesterday, in the Federal Register, we are proposing to designate PFOA and PFAS, including their salts and structural isomers, as hazardous substances. We have found evidence that indicates that these chemicals may present substantial danger to the public health and the environment if released. You'll see in a few minutes, I'll talk a little bit more about the persistency, the mobility, and then the potential impacts of exposure. The health effects that have been noted in various scientific studies have included high cholesterol, increased liver enzymes, thyroid disorders, pregnancy-induced hypertension and preeclampsia, and cancer. So there's a well-known trail of information regarding the impacts of PFOA and PFAS specifically, probably the two most studied PFAS, and our understanding of the threats posed by these substances is what led to our ability to designate, propose designating these two substances as CERCLA hazardous substances. These two have been common contaminants in the environment because of their release into the environment since the 1940s and their resistance to degradation. They are found in many environmental media and in wildlife around the world. One of the ways I look at it is that the attractiveness of some of these substances in terms of their inability to be broken down easily has led to certain industrial uses, but those same properties are things that have made it harder for us to address them in the environment and have led to the need for EPA to take so many actions towards preventing exposures through our both our regulation as well as our plans for cleanup. So that's a way in my mind that I'm able to explain that those properties that are there for their industrial use also make it very difficult for us to address them environmentally. And that's why we're taking this task on. Next slide, please. This designation, the first and immediate and a direct impact is it will require facilities across the country to report on releases of PFOA or PFAS that meet or exceed the reportable quantity that's been assigned to these substances. And that reportable quantity is 1 pound for in a 24-hour period of either PFOA or PFAS. If that much is released to the environment in a 24-hour period, it has to be reported to the federal government. That's what's in our proposed, that's the impact, the immediate and direct impact of our proposed designation of PFOA and PFAS as CERCLA hazardous substances. The information gained through those reports will enhance the ability of federal, tribal, state, and local authorities to obtain information. The information that we gain, that we gather through these reports is available to the public, to tribal governments, state and local governments, as well as the federal government. And we think it'll improve, significantly improve our understanding of the location, the extent of releases. We not only get that information on a site-specific basis, but gathering that information together, we're able to notice trends regarding the frequency, regarding the extent, et cetera. And we think that puts us in a much better position, not only to respond to specific spills that are notified to us, but also to have a better understanding of what else we need to do as a country and as EPA to try to control those exposures in the future. This, as I said, this rule will provide information to the federal government, and that will allow tribes to be notified of these releases of PFOA or PFAS that exceed the reportable quantity. And it also increases our authority, which I'll get into a little bit more on a following slides, to address the existing releases of PFOA and PFAS. Next slide, please. So what are the sources of PFOA and PFAS? The environmental sources can include industrial discharge to soil, to air, and to water of PFOA and PFAS directly. Also, there are precursors to PFOA and PFAS that can be converted to PFOA and PFAS by microbes in soil, sludge, and wastewater, and through abiotic chemical reactions. So most of the releases, we believe, are direct, but we also know that there are precursors that can be converted. And so we ultimately need to address these two specific PFAS that, again, we have the most information about, and we know they're a great concern of among all the PFAS. Also, PFOA and PFAS can be deposited in landfills or created by degradation of their precursors in waste discharges. That can happen via leachates, groundwater pollution migration, and atmospheric releases. I mentioned earlier that some of the characteristics of the substances is that they are hard to break down, which means but they are mobile in the environment. So you can have them in a soil, in a landfill, et cetera. And if there's not good protection, they can be released to groundwater due to the nature of the chemicals. So it's really important for us to have a better understanding as to what the releases are. And also that helps us develop strategies on the protection as well as the cleanup. One piece of news, or good, kind of good news as we tackle this huge problem, is that the principal worldwide manufacturer of PFOA and PFOS and related chemicals, similar chemicals, phased out the production in the early 2000s. However, even though they're not being produced at nearly the same levels or used nearly at the same levels, there's still a lot of contamination already in the environment, and there are still uses going on. And so, and we also know not only domestically, but international companies produce them, and products could be imported that have PFOA and PFOS as constituents. So we know that the problem is still out there, both from historical releases, but also from ongoing uses that have not been completely eliminated. Next slide, please. So in addition to identifying the sources, which we do in our notice of proposed rulemaking, we also provide a lot of information around the prevalence of PFOA. They are very widely detected in surface water samples collected from rivers, lakes, and streams around the United States. They've also been detected in surface and subsurface soils, in groundwater and monitoring wells, private and public drinking water systems throughout the country. They've been found in groundwater, surface water, soil, sediment, and air. They've also been found in wildlife and domestic animals, fish, shellfish, alligators, deer, and avian eggs. There's a tremendous, as I said earlier, these are probably the two most studied PFAS, and there's a tremendous amount of science research on the prevalence of PFOA and PFOS. That was another critical factor as we decided to proceed with this proposed rulemaking, is how prevalent these two PFAS are in the environment. Next slide, please. So what is this? What does this proposal do? And I hit on some of these things before, but I'd like to reiterate a few things that I said earlier. Again, the proposal is to designate PFOA and PFOS as CERCLA hazardous substances. When this regulation is finalized, the designation would, first, it would require facilities, I mentioned this earlier, across the country to report releases above the reportable quantity, which is 1 pound in a 24-hour period. Those are required to be reported to the federal government. That information is available to federal agencies, to tribal nations, to state and local authorities. Again, we get site-specific information, which can help our understanding and consideration if we need to take action on a particular release. But also the information that we get can give us a better idea of overall national trends of the extent, the location, the magnitude of the releases, et cetera. So it is a something that helps a site-specific basis and also broadens our overall knowledge of the releases and the impacts of these substances. I mentioned earlier that we have some additional authorities that we have due to the designation as a hazardous substance. One right now, PFOA and PFOS and other PFAS as appropriate can be designated as pollutants or contaminants. And we have authority under the Superfund law, under CERCLA, to respond to pollutants or contaminants if we are able to determine that there's an imminent and substantial danger caused by that release. And that's our authority in CERCLA 104A1B. What this designation does, if finalized, is it would allow EPA and other agencies to respond to release or threat of releases of PFOA or PFOS as hazardous substances. And that's in CERCLA 104A1A. We do not have to make a determination of imminent and substantial danger. Essentially, by the designation as hazardous substance, we already have that gives us right there without that additional determination, the authority to respond to the hazardous substances. There are also some enforcement provisions in CERCLA that come into play, which I'll talk about in a moment, additional authorities that we have if other requirements happen, that we may be able to bring additional authority into responses by other parties. We also believe that this designation will help establish national consistency in the evaluation and cleanup of PFOA and PFOS. Our experiences with hazardous substances, when we know what those substances are and there's information around those substances, we do tend to note greater consistency and how they are addressed. We also believe it will encourage better waste management practices, especially by the largest users and the manufacturers of these substances, if they know that upon using, you know, if there is a release greater than the reportable quantity, that they have to report it to the federal government. Our experience in the program in general is that that knowledge has led to better waste management practices. Also want to note that this rule has been designated as economically significant. Next slide, please. Okay, rulemaking timeline. Before I get into this, I mentioned, I thought I had one more slide on this, but on the enforcement authorities, just one item I wanted to point out is that while this, the only direct result or new requirement of this designation is the requirement for the facilities to report a release above the reportable quantity, there are a couple of enforcement provisions in the CERCLA law that if you know and you are able to determine that there has been a release, if there is a known source of the release, and if a court holds that a particular party is responsible for that release, then we may have authority to direct or to recover costs for responses that we've done from the parties responsible for those releases. Our focus typically on this and these types of substances is on the larger users, the manufacturers, and those who really are responsible for the introduction of most of the substances into the environment. So there are some additional indirect authorities that we have as a result of this designation. Again, the only direct immediate impact is the reporting requirement that I mentioned earlier. The rulemaking timeline. So last week we posted, actually it's been now a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, we posted on our website the notice of proposed rulemaking for public to view. Yesterday in the Federal Register, the notice of proposed rulemaking was published in the Federal Register. A couple more dates that are really important here. October 7th is the deadline for tribes to inform EPA if they would like consultation. Jean said at the beginning of the call in one of her announcements, and to want to make sure that you all understand that today's webinar is not the opportunity for consultation. And in fact, the purpose of today's webinar is to provide you enough information for each tribe to decide whether or not they would like to consult on the regulation. The deadline for that information or for that notice to EPA is October 7th. So that's a month from now or so. All of the consultations with the tribes would be between the public release, which was a week ago Friday, and October 24th. They have to be completed before the public comment period is closed. And then the public comment period, it will be closed on November 7th. It's a 60-day comment period. I should note that the docket, there were some of the documents were not ready for publication in the docket. So while it was published in the Federal Register yesterday, not all of the documents have yet been posted to the docket. There are a number of documents that have been in there, and folks are busily working trying to get all of the documents in the docket. And that should be sometime this week when all the documents will be finished being loaded into the docket, as I understand it. So I just wanted to let you know that if you were to go to the docket today, you might not see all of the documents that you would by the end of this week when we make sure that we have all the reference documents that are mentioned and cited to in the NPRM in the docket. So again, the deadline for public comments is November 7th. Our current plan to try to finalize the regulation that we have just proposed is August of next year. That date could be subject to change depending on the volume and the nature of comments that we get, the information that we receive from the public, and our other stakeholders, And so that could modify it. We are required to, and we expect to, consider all the comments that come in as we move from the proposed rule to the final rule. So I think with that, let's see, is there any more slides? So here's a little bit more information on the public comment. That right there, the first website there, and I'm thinking that Jean will probably try to post this in the chat box for you to see. That is the website that we stood up on the 26th of August to release the NPRM. And there's a lot of information there. To submit the public comment on the rulemaking, you need to go to www.regulations.gov, and the docket number is shown on this slide. So please, that's where you will find the official place to submit, the best place to submit comments on the regulation. And again, reiterate the deadline for submitting public comments is the 7th of November. The next slide, I just want to remind folks that I mentioned earlier, this webinar is not an official government-to-government consultation. This is a webinar to provide you the information so you can make that determination. If your tribe would like to request government-to-government consultation on this NPRM, you should contact our tribal coordinator, who is Amanda Van Epps. There is her email address and her phone number. And I believe we will be providing that separately so that you have that information. The consultation process will be conducted in accordance with EPA's policy on consultation and coordination with Indian tribes. We do not expect that the memo would have tribal implications as specified in Executive Order 13175. And then on the next slide, we just indicate Michelle Schutz, who is also on today's webinar. She is our rulemaking contact. She's the work group chair and our primary contact on this rulemaking. I'd like to thank Michelle for the incredible amount of work and leadership that has gone into her work on getting this notice of proposed rulemaking published and getting it ready for public comment. So with that,
Oh, Dana, it looks like you muted yourself, but I believe you were saying we were getting ready to transition to Q&A.
Yeah, I don't know how I did that, but yeah, I'm back off mute. And yeah, I think we are now transitioning to Q's and A's. I think there's a couple of us that may answer the questions depending on the nature of that. So,
all right. Thank you. So at this time, I will turn off our recording as the presentation materials have been completed.